First case for argument this morning is Herren v. Daimler Chrysler. Mr. Hand.
Good morning, Your Honors. Opposing counsel, my name is David Henn. On behalf of the appellant, Gary Herren, may it please the Court. The United States District Court in Indianapolis granted Daimler Chrysler's motion for summary judgment and summarized the party's position on Mr. Herren's claims of race discrimination as focusing on two different points of contention. Mr. Herren argues that his poor treatment by Daimler Chrysler was motivated by the fact he's an African American. Daimler Chrysler, on the other hand, points to what they call his poor interpersonal skills and volcanic personality as the product of the way he was treated. The trial court noted that each party had supported their positions with an abundance of evidence. Unfortunately, the trial court determined that Mr. Herren's evidence could not sway a jury. However, in doing so, the district court overlooked materials designated on summary judgment and made some conclusions that invaded the province of the jury. The district court first found that Mr. Herren's claim failed on its most basic level, and that is his failure to demonstrate a materially adverse employment action. However, Mr. Herren specifically designated evidence that as a result of discrimination, he was denied a raise as a product of his February 2000...
Was this argued in the district court?
It was designated on our summary judgment pleadings and...
It didn't ask whether evidence was designated. I asked whether the question was argued in the district court.
Your Honor, I believe it was, and I believe it was specifically pleaded on page 16 of our brief in opposition to summary judgment. There were other factors demonstrating a materially adverse employment action, such as not being paid overtime when it was due and owing in 1999. In support of this, he designated the deposition of Mr. Hall, an area manager. He also designated...
Where was this argued to the district court?
Your Honor, I believe in this portion of the claim, it was argued in actually three areas. One was the discrimination based on a racial harassment. Also, in the portion of the brief which claimed a constructive discharge on the basis of race discrimination and retaliation as well. And then a third place was in the retaliation portion of the claim.
Can you be concrete? Where should I look concretely in the papers to find where you argued this in the district court? And I find your litigation strategy very odd. You're challenged quite specifically by the appellee with not having preserved these arguments in the district court, and you choose not to file a reply brief telling us where you raised the arguments.
Your Honor, the appellants view the disposition on summary judgment as being a tier-step approach. The district court...
Now, look, I'm just looking for concrete information about where you raised these arguments, the kind of information you would have given us had you filed a reply brief.
Specifically to the denial of pay raise was specifically pleaded in that portion of the brief which claimed constructive discharge as a product of race discrimination.
But you can't tell us where.
No,
you want us to read the whole brief and hope we'll find it.
I do not have a page cite in front of me. I can point the court to page 16 of our summary judgment response, which was presented to the trial court.
What does it say?
Page 16 of our summary judgment response specifically pleaded and designated the evidence of
Quote it to me.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Just for the heck of it, why don't you read it to me?
Your Honor, I don't have my brief in front of me. I have my personal, I have my brief filed with this court, but I do not have a summary judgment opposition brief in front of me. the district court, after concluding that there was no materially adverse employment action taken against Mr. Heron, went ahead and proceeded with the rest of the tripartite analysis of race discrimination and assumed that he was able to demonstrate that, then went into the tendered non-discriminatory basis for the employment actions and Mr. Heron's claims that these were pretextual. The first fact that Mr. Heron designated to the trial court was that Daimler Chrysler had offered multiple explanations in explaining why his employment evaluation was changed in 1999 when his immediate supervisor was going to rate him at a relatively high mark on his performance evaluation, but the next in command, Mr. Schaefer, ordered him to lower that that evaluation.
What's contradictory about that? I mean, the superior, was it Schaefer's superior? Whoever it was.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Schaefer is the next highest up.
Yeah, well, he made the observation that this man had very poor interrelation with other employee and supervisor skills, and that was the problem. It wasn't a problem of his production or his capacity at that level. And I don't see why that's the conflict. Or, you know, that
Daimler Chrysler's evaluation process is sectioned off in various levels. What we keep seeing in the several evaluations that were designated to the trial court was that he was rated below what would be their significant contributor level or their contributor level. Well, that rating is specific to performance at the job. Behavior, interpersonal skills, employee relations is rated on an entirely different scale, in a different place on that evaluation form. It is inconsistent and it's outside of Daimler Chrysler's own policies and procedures to lower someone's performance evaluation from significant contributor to contributor or otherwise based upon job behavior or poor handling of employees.
Is there another rating form for that?
Yes, there is, and they take it's placed in some verbiage, and then it's converted into a score of 4321 at that level for the behavior component. Judge Barker, in her summary judgment entry, did an excellent job of summarizing how that appraisal form works. But what happens if Daimler Chrysler can do that is not only does it change the way it's evaluating its employees, but it's putting Mr. Heron on a completely different scale than everybody else. The other supervisors in his division get rated on one level for their performance and how well they produce builds, and they get rated for their employee relationship skills on a separate form. Mr. Heron, on the other hand, he gets rated twice for employee relationship skills because the supervisor two levels up wants that number taken down because of his employee skills. That's inconsistent, and it treats him differently than the other employees.
How do you get rated on the other form?
I'm sorry?
How do you get rated on the other form, the 4321 or whatever it is?
It's supposed to be the immediate supervisor. From his experience in observing Mr. Heron and his contemporaries would rate that based on the hierarchy scale. Then there's a calculation or a formula.
So you
that
get 4-3-2 or 1.
I'm sorry?
4-3-2 or 1. You said there were two. He should have been rated for his interrelationship with other employees and supervisors on another form. And I just wondered what he got. He must have got a low grade there then.
I believe he did, yes, Your Honor. Daimler Chrysler also really rested their case on the notion that these poor interpersonal skills of Mr. Heron made it very difficult for him, anybody, to work with him. And in fact, there are some, they designated evidence into a record that they couldn't find anybody who would take him. There were no area managers who were willing to accept Mr. Heron as a supervisor in their unit. To combat this, Mr. Heron designated the testimony of Mr. Huffman and Mr. Conley, both who were area managers at Daimler Chrysler. Both of them testified that they enjoyed working with Mr. Heron. They found that he was an excellent employee. The evidence designated in the record shows that Mr. Heron, on a quantitative basis, on the performance level, outperformed many of his white contemporaries. Two of his white co-supervisors were specifically noted as having lost hundreds of builds, costing Daimler Chrysler $120,000+. Mr. Heron didn't have that situation. And yet, on the performance evaluation part of the evaluation itself, they're rated higher than he is. And again, there's also some evidence designated in the record that Mr. Heron wasn't the only minority this happened to. But again, it's an instance of Mr. Heron being held to a different standard as white contemporaries and being cloaked in the notion that, well, his performance needs to be downgraded because his behavior and his interpersonal skills were poor. I'm into my rebuttal time. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Heron.
Please the court, counsel. I'm Steve Pockris. I represent Daimler Chrysler. I'm joined by my colleague, Byron Myers. The trial court properly granted summary judgment in this case, and the record evidence shows that for each of several reasons, summary judgment should be affirmed. The facts demonstrate that this case has nothing to do with unlawful race discrimination, harassment, or retaliation. Rather, this is the story of a supervisor with an extremely high opinion of himself, an individual whose hothead and volcanic personality caused him to be disciplined, counseled, and to receive less than stellar evaluations. Instead of changing his ways, instead of listening to the opinions of others, and instead of improving his conflict resolution skills, he's improperly attempting...
We're not a jury. We're not going to resolve factual disputes. You might want to concentrate on grounds on which this was decided. But let's start with your argument that there was no adverse job action.
Yes, Your Honor. With regard to the argument that there was no adverse job action, there are numerous cases that talk about the fact that performance evaluations and minor matters do not constitute adverse actions.
But your adversary says today that, in fact, the plaintiff raised in the district court the claim of not being promoted and not being paid overtime. Is that correct or incorrect?
With regard to not being promoted, there was no failure to promote claim that was raised at the trial court level. With regard to overtime...
Well, your opponent says it was raised at page 12 of his memorandum in opposition to your motion for summary judgment. Is that true or not?
No, there was no failure to promote claim raised.
You checked page 12 during the oral argument and found this.
I did not check, Your Honor, but the claim of a failure to
promote... Somebody here is not telling us the story straight, and we will find out who. But one of you lawyers is misrepresenting the state of the record, because you both can't be right.
Your Honor, there was no claim for failure to promote that was raised at the trial court level. The claim that was raised at the trial court level was that there were two evaluations in 1998 and 1999 that were that Mr. Heron alleged that the that he did not receive as high an evaluation as he should have received. The 1998 evaluation, he received a contributor rating as opposed to a significant contributor rating. The 1999 evaluation, he received a rating of development needed. At the trial court level, we did not dispute the issue of whether that constituted an adverse employment action with regard to the 1999 evaluation. And the reason that we didn't raise that argument is because under the Daimler-Chrysler procedures, if you receive a needs development rating, then he did not receive a raise for that year. So in 2000, he did not receive a raise. And so we did not dispute that issue. What we focused on at the trial court level with regard to the 1999 performance evaluation was that Mr. Heron could not meet the other elements of his prima facie case. In 1999, Mr. Heron had a series of confrontations with his area managers. These were people who were supervisors who were one level above him. In January of that year, he walked out of a meeting with his area manager when his area manager attempted to talk with him about attendance. He then was written up and he refused to sign that performance evaluation. Mr. Hall, who was the manufacturing manager, two levels above Mr. Heron, an African-American male, attempted to find an area manager who would take Mr. Heron in his department.
What is represented at Daimler Chrysler by signing a performance evaluation?
Signing a performance evaluation is an acknowledgement that the employee has received the evaluation and that the supervisor has gone over it with him.
No clause that says, and I agree.
No, Your Honor, there is not any.
Why don't you just have a simple rule that anybody who won't sign a performance evaluation is fired on the spot for insubordination? And we would have fewer of these disputes.
Well, Your Honor, we certainly could have that type of rule if we wanted to. I think your question goes to the fact is, why did we treat Mr. Heron so well?
It's not a question, it's a suggestion.
Thank you, Your Honor. The fact is that there were at least six times when Mr. Heron refused to sign for a performance evaluation or for a disciplinary action, even when he was being told that the problem was that he was not respecting authority. Why didn't Daimler Chrysler treat Mr. Heron as well as it did when he constantly refused to sign these evaluations and sign this paperwork? I can't answer that except to say that it shows that Daimler Chrysler was not engaging in racial discrimination and was not engaging in harassment. When you continue to look at Mr. Heron's conduct in 1999, he already had developed a problem in terms of his dealing with higher authority. We've talked about the fact that in January he walked out of the meeting and refused to sign the paperwork. In August he had a run-in with another manager and was transferred to another department. In October, he hung up on his area manager, Bentley Craig, and in November, he referred to Mr. Craig as the enemy. Also in November, Mr. Heron was supposed to turn in his self-appraisal. In other words, the paperwork that would show how he would rate himself for purposes of his 1999 evaluation. He was asked for this paperwork again and again.
We are not employment arbitrators. This is not a line of argument on either side. Plaintiff thinks he's real good. You think he's not good. This is not what this case turns on.
No,
this case turns on whether there is evidence of an adverse job action, and if so, whether there's evidence that it was attributable to race, not whether you think there was a good reason.
I understand, Your Honor.
Why don't you argue what's legally relevant?
Each of the points that Mr. Heron has raised are not adverse employment actions. He talks about getting paid overtime, not that he didn't get paid this overtime, but it was paid after the fact.
So what you're saying is that your argument is there's nothing in the record to show adverse employment ramifications to him. That's one.
Correct, right. Your Honor. And then if there are any adverse employment actions, You then have to look at whether he was meeting legitimate performance expectations and whether he can identify anybody.
Or whether the adverse action was based on his race.
That's correct.
And the record shows that that was not true. Is that what you're saying?
That is exactly what I'm saying.
There's no evidence to show that it was.
There is no evidence to show anything based upon race. There's no evidence.
There's an argument. Okay.
There's no evidence to show race. There's no evidence to show retaliation. I mean, all this is it's Mr. Heron asking you to substitute your judgment for that judgment of Daimler Chrysler Corporation. When you look at the issues that are raised, again, in addition to the fact that we have no adverse employment actions, even if he had shown something, as you just pointed out, he still has the burden of showing that the adverse employment action, or what he characterizes as an adverse employment action, either was the result of unlawful race discrimination or retaliation. And again, we have no evidence of that. In fact, the evidence is contrary to that. For example, he wants to suggest that Mr. Huffman, he says, well, Mr. Huffman is somebody who was willing to work with Mr. Heron. Well, at the point in time when Mr. Hall, who was the manufacturing manager, was canvassing for people, well, Mr. Huffman had already finished his job working as area manager over Mr. Heron. And in fact, Mr. Huffman was willing to overlook some of the personal problems that Mr. Heron had. But the fact is that Mr. Huffman also recognized that Mr. Heron had interpersonal problems and communications issues with other people, that he didn't respect authority. His reference to Mr. Heron, when he described him, he said, Mr. Heron doesn't get along with people, he's argumentative, not a team player, a lone wolf, not a butt kisser, but would do what he was told.
He belongs on the federal bench, I mean.
He also said, Gary won't change. He is a lone wolf. It is not racially motivated, extremely difficult to deal with. What Mr. Huffman liked about Mr. Heron was that Mr. Heron did a good job of producing parts for him. And by trying to raise the issue that somehow Daimler Chrysler was not allowed to rate Mr. Heron based upon his interpersonal skills, that is incorrect. There's nothing that prevents Daimler Chrysler or the area manager or the manufacturing manager from looking at a performance evaluation and saying, this person really shouldn't be rated as a significant contributor because of the fact that his conduct has caused problems in the workplace and interferes with workplace morale. There's nothing at all in the record that prevents that from being placed on the form. There's only one form, and it shows four levels of, the four standards in terms of what is this person's overall rating. The overall rating system says needs development, contributor, significant contributor, and role model. The fact that Mr. Heron was not rated as high as he wanted, again, this is not an adverse employment action. That's one of the points we made at the district court level. In addition to that, there's just no evidence whatsoever that the rating that he received was in any way racially motivated. In fact, Mr. Schaefer had identified problems with Mr. Heron back in 1996 in terms of the way he dealt with people. Mr. Schaefer is the one who recommended the lower evaluation. Mr. Henn suggesting somehow that there was some racial motivation. In fact, when Mr. Huffman asked if some disciplinary matters could be removed from Mr. Heron's file, Mr. Schaefer, knowing Mr. Heron's race, agreed to do that. So in fact, he engaged in conduct, Mr. Schaefer did, that was favorable, that shows that there was no racial animus toward Mr. Heron. And after Mr. Schaefer agreed to allow this discipline to be taken out of Mr. Heron's file, how did Mr. Heron respond and thank him for that? Well, he started going back to his old ways and his old habits. And what Mr. Schaefer observed is that unless the specter of discipline was hanging over Mr. Heron's head, he ran things in this dictator's type of fashion, and he was constantly getting in fights and arguments with people who were his superiors. And so he was fighting with the area managers as opposed to trying to work with them and as opposed to trying to use his conflict resolution skills. Again, where he says that he suggests that we said that his poor interpersonal skills prevented him from working with anyone. That's not at all what we said. What we said was that when Mr. Hall attempted to find an area manager who would work with Mr. Heron, he could not find anyone, black or white, who would work with Mr. Heron. Again, that's not evidence of racial discrimination. Moreover, when they suggest that Mr. Conley said that he would work with Mr. Heron, well, Mr. Conley was also a supervisor. He was a lead supervisor. He was never an area manager. And in fact, Mr. Conley got along well with Mr. Heron, but when Mr. Conley, who's African American, was deposed, here's what he said. He was asked, "Are you aware that the problems with other individuals here at the transmission plant?" And he says, "Yes, that's true." And he says, "In your observation and your assessment, when you were familiar with Mr. Heron, were the problems that Mr. Heron was having with others because of his race?" And he said, "No, I can't answer that. I don't know. I wouldn't have that information." He was asked, "Were you aware of problems he had because of his style of interacting with both bargaining union and supervisory employees?" Mr. Conley, "I would say that probably had more to do with it than anything else." This is not a case about race discrimination. It's not a case about racial harassment. It's not a case about retaliation. For all of these reasons, summary judgment should be affirmed. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Henn?
Very quickly, Your Honor. On the issue of whether we pleaded before the district court in materially adverse employment.
It's not a question of pleading. It's a question of argument. Pleadings are irrelevant at the summary judgment stage.
Mr. Pockris was correct when he stated that the issue of the denial of a wage claim, of a raise following that 1999 February 2000 appraisal, it was not a disputed fact at the trial court level. I'll ask the court to look at pages 11, 13, and 16, and 15, 16 of our brief in opposition to summary judgment. Again, I apologize. It's not my intention to mislead or misconstrue facts before the court. The entire claim of discrimination was interwoven with these facts. Mr. Pockris provides a litany of problems that they perceive they had with Mr. Heron. Mr. Heron, in opposition, designated evidence specific from other Daimler Chrysler supervisors saying he wasn't a problem. I will leave it with this. If there is not a materially adverse employment action argued in our summary judgment opposition brief, then they're correct. We lose. However, race discrimination was argued in that brief in several places, including in addition to retaliation. If it is determined that it is there, then we have nothing but a slew of facts to throw in front of the jury. They could believe either side, and this should go to trial. So again, if we didn't argue it, we didn't argue it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. The case is taken under advisement.